At Total Wine & More, find the best gifts for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for sis or a single barrel bourbon that dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. Where can you find the best gifts at great low prices that everyone will love? At Total Wine & More, of course, with so many great bottles to choose from. Find something for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for your sis, sparkling wine for a coworker, or a single barrel bourbon for dad. And if you need any help, just ask one of their friendly guides for advice. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
If you want to put them on and do a quick mic check.
Yeah, mic check 1, 2. My mic's off. Yo, give me some more sound. Yeah, turn it up in the headphones. Yo. That's what's good. Hello, mic check. Nope, I can't. There it is.
This is Burnt Toast, a podcast from Food 52 about what doesn't necessarily make it on the website. I'm Kenzie Wilbur. Come rewind. How do you want to be introduced?
Lord of the Galaxy.
Lord of the Galaxy.
Dale Taldy, Lord of the Galaxy.
Top Chef.
Man of the Hour.
Lord Supreme. Everyone's favorite chubby dolphin. So in my circles, because I am completely hairless, I'm the fat dolphin. I'm mad aerodynamic, kind of lazy.
It's a good mix.
So I'm buoyant, really buoyant.
Uh-huh.
I am like really dynamic in the water, but slightly lazy.
I don't know how I'm going to work all that into a bio. Just in case Lord Supreme doesn't mean much to you, I'll clarify. You just heard Dale Taldy, chef, former Top Chef contestant, and author of the recent cookbook Asian American, proudly inauthentic recipes from the Philippines to Brooklyn, a seemingly irreverent, ballsy look at the food he cooks. It's all loud colors and shocking images and remixed pad thai. In this episode, you'll also hear from J.J. Good, his co-author for this book, as well as many other cookbooks we love.
No, it's about the food that I do. To be honest with you, I mean, it's like it's a little bit about, I guess, the story of a immigrant kid, you know, Filipino immigrants, you know, second generation Americans, you know, the culture that's coming from, you know, these second generation kids who have strong roots at home in, say, the Philippines or in China or Korea or Japan or wherever they're from, Mexico, could be anywhere, but are kind of thrown into American society. And I mean, it's a very common story. I feel like nowadays it's because of my age, it's the story's being told now. You know, I think I found cultural identity through food. And I think that's kind of the story that we're writing a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the way that you tell it together and also the way you choose to display it is very different. The idea of inauthenticity, I think, is a really key point in your book. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, all of your recipes are totally remixed.
We were able to hook people in by saying that we were proudly inauthentic. But that inauthenticness is real to me, is my story, my voice, my food. I was raised Filipino back at, you know, at home. So it's like, you know, you're almost completely immersed in Filipino culture. Not to the extent of like watching Filipino TV, but some Filipino TV.
Also Thundercats.
Thundercats, yeah. You mix that in. 85 Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
And then, like, my dad's, his love for watching cockfighting.
So it's your authenticity.
It is, because then, like, at home it was Filipino. You ate Filipino food. No one ever wore their shoes inside the house. You always got to take your shoes off. You know, once I left home and I was, like, at the mall eating cheese fries and, you know, at the arcade where we would play video games, it was cheese fries and hot dogs and gyros and burgers. And at school, I would talk about all the time, it's square pizzas and tater tots.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like, you know, even before the party cut, I got introduced to the party cut in Chicago. It was like, okay, these are square pizzas that you eat on pizza day at lunch, and you got a handful of tater tots. And, you know, you were always like, come on, lunch lady, give me a couple more tater tots. And the dudes who really were able to swindle were, they would ask for two pizzas, but we don't want a second plate, just put it on top of the other one. So the lady that rang you up wouldn't see the second one.
Smart.
Done. Yeah, it was
see, here, I was thinking you were making like a pizza sandwich.
You would do that.
I mean, boom.
So
ooh, next book, bro. Pizza sandwiches.
Next book, bro. Boom.
So you're telling me that your subtitle is like clickbait. It's really authentic.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it 100% is authentic. It's authentic to me.
Yeah.
We wanted to kind of play with the idea of what authenticity is because, of course, you know, you talk about authenticity in, let's say, you go to a Filipino restaurant, right? It's authentic Filipino food. Let's say you say, oh, you tell your friends, oh, it's real, real authentic Filipino food. What does that really mean? Before the Spanish came, was that real authentic Filipino food? Or is real authentic Filipino food what exists in the Philippines now after the Spanish, and also with like the hot dog brought by GIs? Like what is authentic food mean? In Mexico, you can ask the same question. In Thailand, you could ask the same question.
Sure.
Before the chili was brought over, was that Thai food, or is it Thai food now? And what will Thai food be in 40 years? Is that going to be authentic Thai food?
Totally. But I think in food, it's a huge thing, holding something sacred, holding a certain form of something sacred. Like, oh, you know, we would never put that ingredient in that sauce in this region in Italy.
Right.
So do you guys think that there are sacred things in food, or is it just what's authentic to you?
No, it's what tastes good.
Right.
So, I mean, straight up, like authentic. I love when those dudes, like my business partner, David Massoni, he's half Irish, half Italian. But, you know, when you get him in the kitchen, man, he's the most Italian dude you've ever met. You know, he stays true to it. Like, so I made alla matriciana at the restaurant, Bucatini alla matriciana. And it's guanciale, chili flakes, red onion, garlic. It's really simple, a basic tomato sauce, and then your bucatini, finished with typically pecorino. And I used bacon. I'm like, yo, I like pancetta, but why the fuck would you use pancetta if you could have bacon? It's smoky. It's like so much better. And they're like, oh, it's just traditional. And he like totally was like, this is.
It's just not done.
He put his head down. He didn't want to talk about it. I splashed it with white wine. I was just making food. I was like, yo, this is going to taste good. And right. I cooked it up, put it in a bowl. Sure. And then he's like, next thing you know, like half the bowl's gone. I really doubted that you were. Like, come on, man. Seriously, dude. Once you know how to cook, you know how to cook.
Yeah.
And making food taste good is my only priority. That's it. It's my only priority. Authenticity for me is right out the window. Once I learn how to cook, I don't know. It's like a chair or something. Like building a chair. Are there any rules in building a chair except for you have to sit in it? I mean, that's my only. Like, it could look crazy. It could be made with whatever ingredients, whatever materials. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah.
My world is good food, bad food. Good cook, bad cook. That's it.
And all of this, it had to come through in the cookbook, but it had to come through to JJ first. Do you remember what it was like when he first explained his vision?
I remember the early meeting. It was like a matchmaker situation.
Yeah, it was like Tinder.
It was like
someone. Did you swipe right on JJ?
Two people swiped right for us.
Yes.
They right for us.
Someone was like, you should meet Dale.
It was more like Grindr. Actually, it was Grindr. It was like Grindr.
It's like an arranged marriage.
Yes, yes.
And I was like, all he wants to do is probably be on TV, and he just wants to like have his face on a book, like smiling with like a bowl of pasta or something like that.
Is that the next book?
And then
you'll be smiling with pizza sandwiches
but
on the
naked.
Cover.
Sure,
naked.
But nude. No, actually, the next book cover is we're gonna replicate the Mariah Carey Christmas cover album, except nude with the cookbook on it. So that's like the most popular album.
Dropping 2017.
Yes.
This is basically what happened when we met. Like our first three meetings, we just didn't talk about anything book related, right? We talked about you know, I don't know. I feel like we're from the same place in a way. I mean, I'm from Jersey, he's from Chicago, but, you know.
Culturally, I think that was the most important thing, that we vibed culturally.
Right.
So, like,
our references were similar.
Yeah. That I could spit out a hip-hop verse and he would know what the fuck we're talking about.
Right.
You know, I could talk about a McRib. He wouldn't shun it.
Right.
I do want to say, though, as you're telling the story, you're very much telling it together, which is... It's just so perfect.
Finishing each other's
sentence. Oh my God.
Wow. I mean, I know that feeling too. I mean, Dale grew up kind of not being allowed to eat that food, although of course you figured out ways to eat it. And my dad was like, oh, McDonald's, that's bad for you. And I also know the feeling of like going to the drive-thru window and it being like special, even though now it doesn't seem like it's special because you can get it everywhere. But back then it's like, you don't have much money and here's this experience like your parents don't want you to have. It's like the thrill of the forbidden, which is kind of, you know, so Dale grew up eating like, you know, sinigang, like sour fish head soup and shrimp paste this and fried milkfish.
What is it called? Chocolate meat?
chocolate meat.
Dinuguan.
Yeah. Can you explain that really quickly just for people chocolate who don't
meat
know?
It's a form of an adobo. So in the Philippines, like, because like, it's so goddamn hot there, everything has to be, there has to be a way of preservation. So it's a form of adobo, which means cooked in vinegar. It's like a pickle. But they do this with pork, a lot of organ meats, typically tripe and liver, ears, snouts.
All the parts.
All the parts. And then it's so it gets cooked. It's kind of spicy, so it gets cooked with a lot of ginger, onions, garlic, black pepper, bay leaf, with everything starts. Cooked in vinegar, and it gets finished with pork blood. So it turns jet black. So when you're a kid, you're like, I don't know what this is. And they're like, oh, it's chocolate meat. And you're like, okay, chocolate. Mm-hmm. I'll eat it.
I'll try that.
And then like my parents would keep on calling it that. I'm like, this is bullshit. This is not chocolate. And I was like, you don't even need to call it that for me to eat this. I'm down. I like this. Like, this tastes good to me. My brother and sister were like, I'm not eating that. And I'm like, I love this. That's what chocolate meat is. And all most Filipino kids, my generation, most of them, yeah, that should be the name of the next book, dude.
Chocolate meat. Pizza sandwich first, though.
Yeah, pizza sandwich.
Don't go back on your promise.
But that's how you get the kids to eat that.
And then he, you know, you always told me this story about like passing by when he, driving through Chicago, passing by this one McDonald's, which had like a ball pit.
Had a Playland, you know, the McDonald's, oh, the creepy McDonald's Playland in it.
Oh yeah.
He would talk like wistfully of going past this place, like I might have been like, and there was this taqueria run by this woman, and I never got to go, and like a tear welling up in my eyes, and he would talk this way about this McDonald's, like, and they would drive by and be like, Mom, can we stop? And she's like, no, you can't stop at the McDonald's. So like it became this thing, like you really want to try. And at some point his dad would start like not taking him. Did your dad take you to McDonald's or just like those other places?
He was the only one we could convince to do that, because I think he was just so tired of hearing it. He was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna take him there and, you know, zone off into my own world and get a black coffee and let these kids eat crappy food and jump in this, you know, lice infested ball pit, slide down this slide that someone peed on like an hour ago.
Did your mom know?
Probably not.
But then his dad would also take him to, like, his dad fixed, what was it, industrial boilers, like giant boilers?
Yeah, he's
boilers.
A boilermaker. So he's a trades. He was a tradesman.
And all his, like, people who worked with him were, like, you know, recent immigrants also, like, blue-collar
Polish,
dudes.
Polish, Mexican, Puerto Rican, a lot of Polish dudes. But all laborers that if you want to know where good food is, you could ask construction workers. Straight up. That if you know, that's when you know some place is good. So there's a bunch of construction workers there. You know the place is good. Because they're the guys who have to be in the neighborhood for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. And they got to eat, like, you know, if they're not eating food from their home, like, they build something or they fix something and then they're out. But in that period of time, they're finding, like, well, you know, they're finding the ins and outs of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Finally, his dad would take him to, like, your dad took you to that taco place in the back of the butcher shop and Polish places and this burger place. And basically, Dale, so since he, like, was raised on Filipino food, and that was like the only thing he was allowed to eat, almost everything else, everything that wasn't Filipino seemed American to him. So he was eating like a real taco, which to me is like 100% Mexican, mm-hmm. just happened to be eating it here. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is American food to me. He's eating like a gyro. And he's like, this is American because it's not Filipino. And that created this like weird borderless cuisine where like you're mixing stuff that should never be mixed, except when you do, it tastes really good.
We do a Vietnamese style lamb shawarma. And I don't even know, those two places couldn't be more different.
Right.
Yeah.
Couldn't be more different.
Yeah.
But we slow roast this lamb shoulder. It takes like 2 days to cook and clean. We warm it up. We put it with a white sauce, a hot sauce, straight up, you know, an eggplant relish that has like the eggplant relish,
fish sauce and stuff.
Fish sauce in it, and then we serve it with bao buns. People make their own little bao buns.
It's very confusing. Delicious. And that's your
delicious
goal.
But it's kind of like my riff on a gyro.
Yeah.
You know, like, like I'm sure goat and lamb gets eaten in Vietnam. I'm not sure in this technique.
Yeah.
And the technique we use to cook it is like a slow American barbecue.
With Vietnamese spices or
with
no?
So we take everything that's in pho, Vietnamese coriander, charred onion, charred garlic, charred ginger, cinnamon, black peppercorns, cloves, star anise. We grind it up into a paste and we just rub the whole lamb shoulder with it.
I mean, those are a lot of, so there's shawarma, there's like gyro in there somewhere, there's like Vietnam, there's bao buns, like there's a lot of things going on.
There's a lot of stuff.
And it makes sense because it's, in the end, it's like delicious meat and doughy stuff and vegetable stuff.
And everything that you want.
It just works.
Yeah, sandwichy stuff. So, like, for me, it's... It, now, if you were to tell people where, they'd be like, they would think that's weird. But you just got to be able to, like, you know, kind of sift through all that and just tell them. So it's a Vietnamese-style lamb shoulder with bao buns and white sauce and red sauce.
Just eat it.
Yeah, just eat it. Just at the end of the day, just eat it.
Dale doesn't mind the word fusion like many chefs do. And that makes sense. His book is full of cross-cultural recipes like that lamb shawarma and kung pao chicken wings and his take on hot pockets made with roti. As long as the food is good and there's something behind it, he doesn't see a negative in the term.
There's a thing. Fusion works if there's a point of view, right? If it's real. Like I'm a Filipino-American, you know, raised in Chicago, living in Brooklyn. There's a point of view there that I try to own. You know, Russian Jew?
Racist. I'm not Russian. Yeah, no. Russian. Ukrainian Polish.
Ukrainian Polish Jew from Bergen County,
yeah,
from
Jersey,
now living in Brooklyn.
There's
a point of view there.
Right.
A definite point of view there. When it gets low, when fusion gets really fucked up, when it's like the Chinese dude that owns a sushi restaurant that's also doing sushi and Thai food because he wants to appeal to more people. And he blends those two together, and that's like that sucks. That's garbage. Right. Or it's like the French chef who has an Asian fetish and is all of a sudden starting to put in yuzu and like gochujang and like
went on a vacation for like 2 days in,
yeah,
in Korea and
like loves like Asian chicks and now is starting to use, you know, Asian ingredients in his food and there's no point of reference to it.
Right.
He's still making a demi-glace, searing a piece of beef, right, and then all of a sudden he put like lemongrass and gochujang in it, right, and thinks it's Asian and you're like, dude, that sucks. So that's when I think fusion really gets, but like if that sucks then I suck.
The point of reference to Dale's brand of fusion is everywhere in his recipes. He didn't just go to Thailand for 2 days and discover that he should be putting lemongrass in all his food, but there's a different message in the photos.
The photo is him in a fur coat, Jesus piece, two beautiful women in bikinis in his prep kitchen.
There's also him sitting in a parking lot, feeding ramen and steam buns to the same women who, at this point, are wearing only slightly more clothes, and a lobster wearing a gold chain, and Dale's grimacing face while he's getting burrito tattooed across his chest. There are small cartoon cats introducing chapter interludes titled things like Get Lazy and MSG, and yet there's a point. So, like, let's talk about that. You, JJ, we were talking about that a little bit before, and you said you were worried that people wouldn't get the joke.
It's scary because you can't explain a joke in a book or anywhere, because as soon as you explain a joke, it's really not funny.
Yeah.
There was a thought process that went into it, and it was a careful decision. It's kind of a comment on success in the age of the celebrity chef. The photo is him in a fur coat, Jesus piece, two beautiful women in bikinis, in his prep kitchen. There might be a piece of lettuce on the floor.
There's like mad people still working.
Yeah.
Like the mad people are just doing their thing, prepping out lemongrass. There's a woman there rolling dumplings.
And that juxtaposition, I think, says a lot about, you know, as soon as a chef is on TV, they have a book, they have a couple of successful restaurants, people are like, wow, they must be rolling in money. I mean, on TV. And the reality is, you're spending a lot of time in like a basement prep kitchen, don't have a ton of money. It's funny that people think chefs are in a glamorous and super happy.
Yeah, it's that hood rich. It's that hood rich. It's that real hood rich kind of persona. And I'm going to pretend like that's exactly what we're going for. Like I told JJ when I was
oh yeah,
like 22 years old, I was like, man, if I want to be Food and Wine Best New Chef. We're like 20. It's like a bunch of us kitchen rats that were all like working at Vong. And it was such a good crew of guys that were working there. And I was the worst cook out of all of them. Like 22 years old, smoking weed every day, walking into work, never set up. Like always just, I was just the worst cook. Like on the same station for like a year. But we would leave there, go get beers across the street, and we'd just be talking mad shit. I'm like, yo, man, I'm going to get Food and Wine Best New Chef. And when I do, I don't even want to be on the cover with all the other chefs. I want my own centerpiece. I want my own like fold out on the second page. And I'm gonna have a fur coat on. I'm gonna have two girls next to me, like maybe a pit bull on a chain. You know, I'm gonna have Food and Wine Best New Chef on a link like this big. I wanted to look like this cover of Vibe or Source magazine.
Right.
And those are like a dream.
Yeah.
That was like, that was it.
Well, and those are the emblems of success when you grow up listening to like Biggie and Jay. And
Yeah. After the conscious hip hop that, you know, because I grew up with the conscious hip hop and then I was just like, it all kind of died out and no one was rapping anymore. No, Money Cash Hoes was like the only thing that everyone was talking about. So that ends up becoming like this model of success. And I guess we're playing on it. And, you know, it was just something I'd always wanted to do. And
the photographer's name is Will Hereford, and he's really, really awesome, awesome guy, awesome photographer.
Amazing person. I mean, one of the coolest dudes that I know.
So we had a vision, sort of a vision for the book, for the look of the book. One of the ideas, as Dale said, everything should look a little gross, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
That was one of the, that was one of the mandates. But just being like me, Dale, and Will there and having fun and being silly, that was how a lot of the photos got.
Did you come up with the vision for everything looking a little gross together? Or was it something that you came in with and you knew you wanted a certain look?
What's funny is if you look at the first picture we took for the actual session, it was a very composed dish. And it's in the book right now. It's the kale salad.
Yeah.
It's super ultra composed.
Kind of fitting that it's a kale salad, huh?
Yes. So it's ultra super composed. It was tweezered the fuck out. Like, all my chefs were like putting things here and there, and it was super clean. And then when I, and it was like, oh yeah, it's a good looking picture. And I looked at it, I was like, this is not the direction of the book.
Right.
I was like, that is complete, that is not going to be the direction of this book. And it made the cut. And I think it's almost so, it's funny that, like you said, it's the kale salad.
Yeah.
And it's like the redheaded stepchild of the entire book, because nothing else in that book is healthy at all. That's the only thing that you could be like, oh, you know, that's kind of healthy when you eat that.
And the only other recipe in the book that was tweezered when it was plated was the nachos. Because Dale was like, oh,
awesome.
This is really funny. Like, we were tweezering the kale salad. Like, imagine if somebody were to get like really finicky about plating nachos.
But that's the idea of our nachos, is that oftentimes it's like this dish that someone just throws together, right? It's like whatever, it's just nachos. But to us, it's like there's so much beauty in like the perfect plate of nachos. It's like the amount of sauce, the right amount of cheese,
the,
you know.
The like, what is it, the layering of the
layering.
Chip? Like, do not do like a stack of chips. If you do a stack of chips, the poor chips underneath get nothing.
They get no love.
It's such a waste.
No, they deserve to be tweezered.
So we have like these school trays, these school lunch trays. And we always, and even at the restaurants, we plate them on the, so it's about surface area. So it's not like really crazy high, but it's just really spread out. So every chip gets a little something, something.
I actually think that's the best way to do mac and cheese too, because you get just the crispy top. And that's an Amanda Hesser thing. I can't take credit for that, but it's
that's a genius.
Pretty brilliant. Because everybody wants the corners
that's
and the tops.
That's a genius recipe.
Did you guys ever get any publisher pushback from, you know, women in bikinis? And
that wanted, I wanted that to be the cover.
Oh, did
but
you?
They were not going to let us do that. I was like, can I be the back? And they're like, no.
They were pretty they were pretty good otherwise.
The otherwise,
there was
were
very little. I was like, are you guys sure? I mean, I was advocating for it all, but I was like, wait, are you sure?
Yeah, I was just like, you know, this is the way I wanted to be.
But even the cover itself is like, it's not polished cover. I mean, it's a beautiful, it's a really cool photo, and it's really striking, I think. But it's like not what you think about when you think about the cover of a cookbook. I mean, there are these, I'm thinking about like the Alex Stupak's new book about tacos.
Yeah, it's just a taco.
It's a
tortilla.
It's like stark gray background with a tortilla.
Beautiful.
It's stunning.
It's gorgeous.
But Dale's is like him with Jordans on and an apron eating like out of a takeout container and looking kind of like a little, like
a little bothered.
Like
the Chinese food, took too long.
Right.
Like the dude took too long. Like Seamless told me it was 30 minutes. What the fuck? It's like 50 minutes.
It was just fun. We were having fun. And I think that comes through.
Yeah, and there are so many more photos than just the naked girl ones. There are you like destroying a salmon sandwich with like sauce running down your face. And they all have that same feel.
Right.
Whether or not they're full of naked people.
It's food, right?
It's food.
It's food is fun. Food travels through your and goes out your
somewhere. I mean, what was the guy? The guy from Joe Beef said that.
Right.
It's a step away from being shit.
Right.
So
and he well,
why
one,
take it so seriously?
The one photo Dale didn't get in the book that he really wanted to, just because we couldn't find a place for it, because we wanted, there were other photos we wanted instead, was the one of you eating Hot Pockets looking kind of guilty.
Oh, yeah.
And in the background you can kind of see like half see the sign on the door in back of him that says restroom. Like just a little nod to that idea, like you're eating gross food, like it's delicious. you know, it's basically a Hot Pocket.
Yeah,
like Dale's
it's
version
a very
of a Hot
warm pocket.
Pocket.
Yeah, it's a very warm pocket.
Yeah. Trademark.
It's gonna run right through you.
Yeah.
Are you gonna save that for the pizza book?
The pizza sandwich book.
Maybe
yeah.
Pizza sandwich book.
But the recipe is in the book,
yeah.
And it's really good.
Yeah.
And you can.
There was a lot of moments where I would be cooking these things, and I would make them for him, and they weren't on the normal menu because he'd come in and eat at the restaurant a couple times, and he would eat these. I was like, "Yo, you want to try it now?" So he'd eat it, and he'd be like. And he'd keep on eating it. He's like, "This is really." I go, "Are you just hungry, or do you really think it's good?" He goes, "This is really good." I go, "What the fuck did you think I was going to do? You like, I was going to make crappy food for this thing?"
Well, when you said it was it's a Hot Pocket. It's a recreation of a Hot Pocket
with roti, right?
With roti, yeah. With frozen roti, pratha, and he specifically says in the recipe, "Do not get mozzarella for the interior from
Don't
a place."
Get, yeah.
Where they say mozzarella, like mozzarella.
If you
hear that, you're in the wrong place.
Shitty shredded mozz.
Or like polio.
The polio shredded mozzarella. Polio.
Something like that's kind of squeaky and melts in the right way.
Yeah.
You know? And like Hormel, I don't think we put this in the book, but like,
that's
I think we use like
we use.
Straight up Hormel pepperoni.
Yeah. Like don't try to elevate something that shouldn't be.
Do not get rid of the nitrates.
Or you can, but you know, fresh buffalo mozzarella is like, such a waste. It has so much more water or milk in it still than the semi-dried kind of, you know, sliced pizzeria joint stuff. Like, right. That stuff is, like, what you need. It's drier. It'll melt better.
Yeah.
Right. And you're wasting your money if you're buying that and then covering it with Hormel pepperoni and stuffing inside a roti and bake it, like...
Totally. Yeah, there's a beauty in that honesty, kind of.
Yeah.
100%.
And, like, understanding that, like, the cheese I want on a burger, and it's amazing to hear... this like confirmed by someone who is like French trained and has worked in a million restaurants and has really good taste in food, but I'll be like, oh, I have like guilty. I like American cheese on my hamburger. Like, do you like American cheese on your hamburger?
It's the only thing we put on our burgers.
I love American cheese on my burger.
Nothing else melts like American cheese.
Yeah,
own it.
Yeah, own that.
More importantly, not even melts. Nothing has that weird salinity that it has.
If your book had a soundtrack, what album would it be?
Oh man,
oof, it's a good one. I mean, this is probably one of my favorite. Enter the 36 Chambers. It's the Wu. It would be early Wu Tang. Enter 36. Because this is like, yo, you just entered it. Whoa, what did I get myself into? I guess that would kind of be. It's so like. It's hitting from so many different places. You know, I really feel like the group of people that we put together, on this.
The project.
Yeah, on the project.
Wow.
Could be the Wu.
Wow.
You know? I do. I really feel like.
Who am I? I'm Jizza.
Yeah, you're the producer.
I'm
Jizza. You're Jizza, so you got to be the producer.
But that would be RZA.
Oh, you're RZA then.
I just wanted to be the genius.
You got to be
Jizza
the producer.
The
so you got
Will,
RZA.
Will's who's a pretty one? Ghostface. Yeah.
That's Will Hereford.
Oh, he's a good looking dude.
You want to spit a few verses for us?
Oh fuck no! This is long gone. Me trying to rhyme. Long gone.
I mean, you walked in here so confident with the mic checks. I thought maybe.
Oh yeah, no.
If you promised never to put it on the.
Oh well,
thing,
she
I
swears.
Would do that.
She swears. I promise.
You can.
Oh my god! Of course I can.
Oh my gosh.
JJ's better than me.
When the mics go off, I'll do it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Very fun.
Dale and JJ's book, Asian American, went on sale last week. And that's it for this episode of Burnt Toast. Our producer is Tim Einenkel, and thanks also to Laura Mayer, Henry Malofsky, and Andy Bowers at Panoply. Please let us know what you think of the show. Our Twitter address is @food52, and you can email us at editors@food52.com. If you like the show, tell everyone you know, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions about fusion or feelings about cookbook design, we want to know about them. So tweet them and hashtag them with F52podcast. For Dale Talday and JJ Good, I'm Kenzie Wilbur. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.
Kenzie, it was fun. Was it too much fun though?
No, this is great.